Chapter 20. Hurry of my young spirits as I had never known before, and when I got to the parlor door, and the thought came into my head, that it might be my mother, I had only thought of Mr. or Miss Murdstone until then. I drew back my hand from the lock, and stopped to have a sob, before I went in. At first I saw nobody, but feeling a pressure against the door, I looked round it, and there, to my amazement, were Mr. Peggotty and Ham, ducking at me with their hats, and squeezing one another against the wall. I could not help laughing, but it was much more the pleasure of seeing them, than at the appearance they made. We shook hands in a very cordial way, and I laughed and laughed, until I pulled out my pocket handkerchief, and wiped my eyes. Mr. Peggotty, who never shut his mouth once, I remember, during the visit, showed great concern when he saw me do this, and nudged Ham to say something. "Cheer up, Master Davy Boar," said Ham, in his simpering way. "Why, how you have growed! Am I grown?" I said, drying my eyes. I was not crying at anything in particular, that I know of, but somehow it made me cry, to see old friends. "Growed, Master Davy Boar? Ain't he growed?" said Ham. "Ain't he growed?" said Mr. Peggotty. They made me laugh again, by laughing at each other, and then we all three laughed until I was in danger of crying again. "Do you know how Mama is, Mr. Peggotty?" I said. "And how my dear, dear, old Peggotty is." Said Mr. Peggotty. "And little Emily, and Mrs. Gummidge?" Said Mr. Peggotty. There was a silence. Mr. Peggotty, to relieve it, took two prodigious lobsters, and an enormous crab, and a large canvas bag of shrimps, out of his pockets, and piled them up in Ham's arms. "You see," said Mr. Peggotty, knowing as he was partial to a little relish with your wittles, "when he was along with us, we took the liberty. The old mother biled him, she did. Mrs. Gummidge biled him." "Yes," said Mr. Peggotty, slowly, who I thought appeared to stick to the subject on account of having no other subject ready, "Mrs. Gummidge, I do assure you, she biled him." I expressed my thanks, and Mr. Peggotty, after looking at Ham, who stood smiling sheepishly over the shellfish, without making any attempt to help him, said, "We come, you see, the wind and tide making in our favor, in one of our Yarmouth lugs to Gravesen. My sister, she wrote to me the name of this here place, and wrote to me, as if ever I chanced to come to Gravesen, I was to come over and inquire for Master Davy, and give her duty, humbly wishing him well, and reporting of the family as they was uncommon to be sure. Little Emily, you see, she'll write to my sister when I go back, as I see you, and as you was similarly uncommon, and so we make it quite a merry-go-rounder." I was obliged to consider a little, before I understood what Mr. Peggotty meant by this figure, expressive of a complete circle of intelligence. I then thanked him heartily, and said, with a consciousness of reddening, that I supposed little Emily was altered too, since we used to pick up shells and pebbles on the beach. "She's getting to be a woman, that's what she's getting to be," said Mr. Peggotty. "Ask him." He meant Ham, who beamed with delight and assent over the bag of shrimps. "Her pretty face." Said Mr. Peggotty, with his own shining like a light. "Her learning." Said Ham. "Her writing." Said Mr. Peggotty. "Why, it's as black as jet. And so large it is, you might see it anywheres." It was perfectly delightful to behold with what enthusiasm Mr. Peggotty became inspired when he thought of his little favorite. He stands before me again, his bluff hairy face irradiating with a joyful love and pride, for which I can find no description. His honest eyes fire up, and sparkle, as if their depths were stirred by something bright. His broad chest heaves with pleasure. His strong loose hands clench themselves in his earnestness, and he emphasizes what he says with a right arm that shows, in my pygmy view, like a sledgehammer. Ham was quite as earnest as he. I dare say they would have said much more about her if they had not been abashed by the unexpected coming in of Steerforth, who, seeing me in a corner speaking with two strangers, stopped in a song he was singing and said, I didn't know you were here, young Copperfield. ... For it was not the usual visiting room, and crossed by us on his way out. I am not sure whether it was in the pride of having such a friend as Steerforth, or in the desire to explain to him how I came to have such a friend as Mr. Peggotty, that I called to him as he was going away. But I said, modestly, good heaven, how it all comes back to me this long time afterwards. Don't go, Steerforth, if you please. These are two Yarmouth boatmen, very kind, good people, who are relations of my nurse, and have come from Gravesend to see me. ... said Steerforth, returning. I am glad to see them. How are you both? ... There was an ease in his manner, a gay and light manner it was, but not swaggering, which I still believe to have borne a kind of enchantment with it. I still believe him, in virtue of this carriage, his animal spirits, his delightful voice, his handsome face and figure, and, for aught I know, of some inborn power of attraction besides which I think a few people possess, to have carried a spell with him to which it was a natural weakness to yield, and which not many persons could withstand. I could not but see how pleased they were with him, and how they seemed to open their hearts to him in a moment. You must let them know at home, if you please, Mr. Peggotty, I said, when that letter is sent, that Mr. Steerforth is very kind to me, and that I don't know what I should ever do here without him. ... ... said Steerforth, laughing. You mustn't tell them anything of the sort. ... And if Mr. Steerforth ever comes into Norfolk or Suffolk, Mr. Peggotty, I said, while I am there, you may depend upon it, I shall bring him to Yarmouth, if he will let me, to see your house. You never saw such a good house, Steerforth. It's made out of a boat. ... Made out of a boat, is it? ... said Steerforth. It's the right sort of a house for such a thorough-built boatman. ... So 'tis, sir, said Ham, grinning. You're right, young gentleman. Master Davy Boar, gentleman's right. A thorough-built boatman. Whore. That's what he is to. ... Mr. Peggotty was no less pleased than his nephew, though his modesty forbade him to claim a personal compliment so vociferously. Well, sir, he said, bowing and chuckling, and tucking in the ends of his neckerchief at his breast. I thank ye, sir. I do my endeavors in my line of life, sir. The best of men can do no more, Mr. Peggotty, said Steerforth. He had got his name already. I'll pound it, it's what you do yourself, sir, said Mr. Peggotty, shaking his head, and what you do well right well. I thank ye, sir. I'm obliged to you, sir, for your welcoming manner of me. I'm rough, sir, but I'm ready leastways, I hope I'm ready, you understand. My house ain't much for to see, sir, but it's hearty at your service, if ever you should come along with Master Davy to see it. I'm a reglar dodman, I am, said Mr. Peggotty, by which he meant snail, and this was in allusion to his being slow to go, for he had attempted to go after every sentence, and had somehow or other come back again. But I wish you both well, and I wish you happy. Ham echoed this sentiment, and we parted with them in the heartiest manner. I was almost tempted, that evening, to tell Steerforth about pretty little Emily, but I was too timid of mentioning her name, and too much afraid of his laughing at me. I remember that I thought a good deal, and in an uneasy sort of way, about Mr. Peggotty having said that she was getting on to be a woman, but I decided that was nonsense. We transported the shellfish, or the relish as Mr. Peggotty had modestly called it, up into our room unobserved, and made a great supper that evening. But Traddles couldn't get happily out of it. He was too unfortunate, even to come through a supper like anybody else. He was taken ill in the night quite prostrate he was in consequence of crab, and after being drugged with black draughts and blue pills, to an extent which Temple, whose father was a doctor, said was enough to undermine a horse's constitution, received a caning and 6 chapters of Greek Testament for refusing to confess. The rest of the half year is a jumble in my recollection of the daily strife and struggle of our lives, of the waning summer and the changing season, of the frosty mornings when we were wrung out of bed, and the cold, cold smell of the dark nights when we were wrung into bed again, of the evening schoolroom dimly lighted and indifferently warmed, and the morning schoolroom which was nothing but a great shivering machine, of the alternation of boiled beef with roast beef, and boiled mutton with roast mutton, of clods of bread and butter, dog's-eared lesson books, cracked slates, tear-blotted copy books, canings, rulerings, hair cuttings, rainy Sundays, suet puddings, and a dirty atmosphere of ink surrounding all. I well remember, though, how the distant idea of the holidays, after seeming for an immense time to be a stationary speck, began to come towards us, and to grow and grow. How from counting months, we came to weeks, and then to days, and how I then began to be afraid that I should not be sent for, and when I learned from Steerforth that I had been sent for, and was certainly to go home, had dim forebodings that I might break my leg first. How the breaking up day changed its place fast, at last, from the week after next to next week, this week, the day after tomorrow, tomorrow, today, tonight when I was inside the Yarmouth mail, and going home. I had many a broken sleep inside the Yarmouth mail, and many an incoherent dream of all these things. But when I awoke at intervals, the ground outside the window was not the playground of Salem House, and the sound in my ears was not the sound of Mr. Creakle giving it to Traddles, but the sound of the coachman touching up the horses. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.